go. Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! This thing on? By God, I think this thing's on. Feel like I've been gone for a week. Oh, wait. I have been. This is the Horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is where we live. That's where you go if you want to jump into the chat room, and lots of folks are, seeing as it's my first evening back after a week away from the studio, from the hills and hollers of almost level West by Coal, Virginia stand. And from our conversation, indeed, good evening, Anatole, and good evening, Dr. Who, and Gerald, and Jug of Punch. Good evening, Mr. Gibson. Good evening, Texas D. Good evening, Waggy, from the other side of the world. And good evening to our longtime, inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderators, Lottie and Sparky. Sparky, who's hanging out in the man cave because it's actually cool enough to be there right now. Let's get this party started. Hot diggity. 12 minutes past the hour, a little bit late starting on the program this evening, but there's a good reason for that. About 10 minutes before airtime, the rain started coming in sideways, and the trees started trying to imitate the rain and go sideways themselves. And generally speaking, when something like that happens, we pay attention. Because there was sort of a roaring sound outside, and I haven't heard one of those since June the 29th, 2012, when the much damage-causing derecho blew through. You got to say it like that, derecho, because it was very destructive. And so I wasn't sure if we were going to be bugging out down to the basement or not. And that was going to be a lot of fun, too, because you ever tried to catch a cat who didn't want to be caught? Yeah, see? And, hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. And then I looked outside, and lo and behold, I saw something that I've seen in other places. You know, I went to college a couple of years in Missouri and grew up in Alabama and lived in Georgia for a couple of years. And so I know what it looks like when a funnel cloud forms, and I saw a cloud trying to get all raggedy and fall down on the ground, and things were beginning to spin a little. Yeah, and I thought, pay attention. Plus, the antiquated, coal-fired, extremely expensive Appalachian power grid had blinked a couple of times. And so even though things have since calmed down, the usual advisories and disclaimers occur for when it rains around here, to wit, this program could end at any moment. Not because I'm going to run screaming out the door, you know, Auntie M! Auntie M! No, but because the antiquated, extremely expensive, early last century's technology coal-fired power grid could crap out at any time, and has been known rather frequently so to do. Mm-hmm. So that obtains. That's just still there. And I mean to tell you, before this storm blew in, it was hot. The thermometer in the vehicle said it was, like 96 degrees or something. And it felt it. It felt it. Not quite as hot as it was last Friday. More on that in a minute. But hot just the same. Not as hot as where you are. Mo Liberal in the chat room letting me know that it's 108 degrees there at the moment. And I think the heat index probably has it somewhere around 116. I love climate change, don't you? Yeah. Especially the part of it, not the part that's not real. So we got a lot of ground to cover this evening. And the usual stuff applies. We try to raise $200 every evening, and it would be awfully nice to raise that this evening. Thanks very kindly to everyone who participates. Some things haven't shown up at the mailbox that were expected, and so we really need to raise each evening's fundraising amount this week. And if we can start with $200 this evening, we'll be doing great. The PayPal interface is at headonradionetwork.com, and the mailing address, if you prefer to use the U.S. mail, and Boss Man Wayne put on his spider-proof gloves and reached into the echo chamber, and the damn spiders in there about ripped the gloves off his hands. But the mailing address is The Horn, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB 318, Beckley, B-E-C-K-L-E-Y, W-V-25801. Okey-doke. And, of course, the gentle reminder always applies. Checks and money orders should be made payable to The Horn and not to Bob Kincaid, because that's what Boss Man Wayne takes care of, and, well, I never see them, which makes it kind of to endorse them. So if they're endorsed to The Horn, he just and deals with it, and away it goes. So again, 10 folks at 20, 20 folks at 10, 1 at 200, 2 at 1, 4 at 50, 8 at 25. It matters not as long as we get everything taken care of this evening. So, yes, indeed, it is Moran Monday here on The Horn, and believe you me, I know. But I thought I'd give you a little bit of a trip update before we jump into that portion of the program, if that's okay. No, Moran Monday now. Well, too bad. Brother Gerald getting us started this evening. Thank you very kindly. Just got a note from him saying $25 on the way, so that'll leave us at $175 to go for the evening. Thank you very kindly, Gerald. Much appreciated. He saw this storm come through before I did, and it was a humdinger. All seems to be pretty quiet now. Hopefully, we'll remain that way. Yeah, let's see here. I guess not. 7 p.m. 100% chance of thunderstorm. 8 p.m. 100% chance of thunderstorm. 9 p.m. 40% chance of thunderstorm. 30, 40, 60 at 1, 50 at 2. Oh, I got a feeling Agnes is going to be staying up all night. She does not like this sort of thing. Not at all. So, Gerald says, nah, it didn't amount to much in the Kanawha River Valley. It blew awfully damned hard up here, and, I mean, we're just not used to seeing that sort of thing. Thank you very kindly to Luda. Luda said, just thought I'd throw off your math a little. Hope you had a great trip and knocked some pig-licking heads. It was an interesting trip. And, well, to be quite candid, a word like progress, though spelled the same and pronounced the same in and inside and outside of Washington, D.C., has decidedly different meanings. Oh, yeah, there it is. Yeah, thank you, Luda. And 38 cents. Now I got to do that in my head. Oh, yeah, 38 cents. Okay, so that's 62. See, I could do that. Yeah. No, progress is defined differently. What you and I would recognize as progress anywhere except Washington, D.C., they don't know the meaning of it. But in the long run, we did make progress. We focused the entirety of our efforts on the Senate side of Capitol Hill. We talked to, in the space of the 3 days, so, you know, Monday being the day after Independence Day, or the Independence Day weekend, things were kind of not moving. That gave us Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday, and, well, Friday if we could have to work. So that was Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. And those of you who follow my Facebook postings know that we even went to some Republican offices. Sure, why not? Because sooner or later, it's going to take everybody to bring anything resembling relief to the brutalized areas of Appalachia wherein we live. So we talked a lot about the things that you know about. We talked a lot about the various and sundry peer-reviewed science articles. We talked a lot about the study out of the Mary Babb Randolph Cancer Center up in Morgantown, West Virginia, that shows that lung tissue cells that are subjected to blasting dust begin developing tumorigenic processes. Mm-hmm. And we made our ask for the bill to be, and by the way, that phrase has always been grating on my ear, but that's Washington speak, to make and ask. Kind of tells you a little bit about Washington, doesn't it? To make and ask. To make and ask. And it can sneak right into your own language before you know what's happened, and you're using the phrase. One does not ask in a congressional office, be it Senate or House. One makes an ask, which is an entirely useless way of expressing the idea of a request. One makes a request, one asks. But as with so much in Washington, D.C., everything is bass-ackwards. So anyway, it was the fifth day of July when we left here. Agnes and I, we like to travel. I mean, I don't mind interstates. They're good for getting you where you're going in a hurry. But in the case of the trip from here to D.C., inevitably one will go from I-64 onto I-81. And I-81 is just a misery. I mean, really. It's just hateful. It's one long C.W. McCall song. Looks like we got us a convoy. But they're all moving very slowly because it's also highly patrolled. So there's a little place where we get off the road, and we take a little two-lane back road that's really scenic and lovely. We stopped at the Augusta Springs wetlands area just to get out and walk around, keep from getting all rickety and stiff and stuff, and walked around. It's part of the George Washington National Forest. Agnes and I stopped and walked around. It was the first time, you know, that we had been away from all of our children more than overnight and, like, more than 50 miles. Or overnight and more than 50 miles. No, really. Had it not been all worky, it would have almost been, dare I say it, like a honeymoon. But it wasn't, and we went up and went on about our business. But let's see, the one, especially once we got into Virginia. Now the little two lane road we traveled to get out to I-64 is like a highway through my family's past, because it goes right past where one of my multi great ancestors settled. Became the first white settler on the Meadow River. No white man will ever know where. No, never mind. We know where. And it's beautiful country. And it's hard not to consider what that meant back then. It meant that he was the first white man who was willing to go in and steal land from the native peoples who were at the time occupying the area, most of whom were Shawnee, and spoke a dialect of Siouan. That's how it's identified in the language groups. S-I-O-U-I-A-N. Which kind of makes sense, because that genetic haplotype has been identified as far back as 10,000 years around here. And in Augusta County, Virginia, the first Kincaids set up housekeeping. Once again, dispossessing the people who had been on that ground for, you know, a few millennia. But somewhere in the general area of that Augusta Springs wetlands area, and that runs, that sits hard by the banks of the Calf Pasture River. Lovely little babbling stream. But one of the neat things, we walked around, we saw some deer, we heard bullfrogs. Agnes called the bullfrogs. She stood at the trail and went, bruh. And the next thing you know, 14 dozen male bullfrogs are going, is that you, honey? Really. Dragonfly. It was a lovely, just a nice little 30-minute walk. And as we came to the end of the walk, we saw this little grassy area that had some concrete poured. And they informed us, I hope this will make sense at some point. A sign informed us that that was all that remained of a bottling plant built there by a millionaire in 1903. It has since been largely reclaimed by the marshy grasslands. And there really are springs there, and that was what the millionaire was exploiting. And all that's left there is a ruin. Just a concrete slab was all that remains of his dreams, of all the profits he would make, and all the riches he would ingather unto himself. Concrete slab. Of course, there's probably a concrete slab over him somewhere, too. Capitalists. Still haven't figured out that they don't hitch U-Hauls to hearses. So we got back in the car, and we went onward. And after a while, I think Agnes got a little tired of me, because she'd be looking around, looking out the windows, checking the sights out, and every now and then I'd go, idiot! She'd go, what? No, not you, dear. Idiot! Ah! Because being the 5th day of July, there were Confederate battle flags all over that hunk of the Old Dominion, Virginia. And eventually we started getting past or passing pickup trucks, all muddy and such like, with Confederate flags festooning crudely fashioned poles that they had stuffed down in the holes in their bed. Many of them often had that heritage, not hate, written on them. We saw Confederate flags in windows. We saw them hanging from second-story balconies of places that were probably standing when that was the national flag of Virginia, until the national flag of Virginia became a simple white square of cloth. And, well, yeah, we talked about it on the way up. Agnes is a more forgiving and gentler soul than I, and she said, "You don't have to say idiot every time." I said, "No, I'm just keeping count. One little, two little, three little idiots. Four little, five little, six little idiots. Seven little, eight little, nine little idiots." You get the idea. And believe me, there were a lot more than 10. Oh, well, thanks for the update. Just now, flash flood warning, this area until 10:30 p.m. Avoid flood areas, check local media, National Weather Service. Yeah, dismiss. Thanks. Wonder what they'd do if they'd seen that thing I saw. I just had a note from Robert up near Morgantown. He says, "Weather radar shows what must be a tornado near Summersville, Kentucky. Wouldn't want to be there." I thought he was going to say Summersville, West Virginia, and I was going to say, well, that's the general direction that cloud I saw was heading. So we got up to, we stayed in Manassas because, well, the hotel costs in D.C. would have been, well, they were brutally prohibitive. So we commuted in every day and commuted back, took our meetings, and the reason I'd said I wanted to get on the air, and I really did, I took the rig with me, but by the end of every work day, we were 7:30, 8 o'clock getting back, because even if, and I was surprised, one has to be careful. But one can get into Washington, D.C. in the morning on I-66 in a reasonable amount of time from a place like Manassas. The evening is another thing altogether. Didn't matter if we left at 4, didn't matter if we left at 5. There was going to be some serious parking in the middle of I-66 westbound. By the way, Agnes got a new thrill, I guess, if you could call it that. We were almost to our exit, just a few miles out. When I looked up, I heard a noise, had the window crack, and looked up in my rearview mirror and saw, I don't want to use the word gang, but a passel, that's a good hillbilly word, a passel of motorcyclists. And I'm not talking about the usual procession of middle-aged to elderly Harley riders that one often runs across on the way to D.C., no. These were kids, I'd say late teens, early 20s. Wearing helmets and nothing else in the way of gear. And they were doing about 100 miles an hour in pretty heavy traffic. And at one point, two of them passed us on our passenger side. They were over in the breakdown lane, or near the breakdown lane. They were riding between where we were on the pavement and where the little buzzer strip begins. And two passed on the white hash marks to my immediate left. And that happened a couple of times. And Agnes did not like it at all. First word out of her mouth, words out of her mouth. Where are their mothers? And it was highly upsetting to her. And she kept asking, how would their mothers feel if they knew what their sons were doing out there? They were all on the so-called sport bikes, light frames, probably 1,000cc engines, designed for straight-line speed. And they looked an awful lot like organ donors in training. So it took a couple of hours for Agnes to settle down from that, but we did our work. And then Friday, with no meetings to attend, they really don't like to take meetings on Friday. And let me take a moment here and explain that obviously we've been doing this for a while, and I've never experienced it to be more difficult to get a meeting in a senatorial office than it was this time through. They've changed their addressing system in their email, and most cases you have to use an online communications interface from the website, and it was really frustrating. But we did get meetings. And I don't know if this is something having to do with chinless Mitch McConnell's ascension to the majority leadership or what, but it was a pain. So we didn't get any meetings on Friday, and I was thinking, hey, I'll do a program. But while I'd been through there a million times, and it was about 9:30, 10 o'clock in the morning, and the Manassas National Battlefield was not too far away, I looked at Agnes and said, hey, let's go see the battlefield. Because the first battle of Manassas actually took place on June the 21st, 1861. And I realize it may be kind of nerdy, but I am fascinated with that kind of history. And, well, frankly, I sort of kept Mr. Stress near and dear to my heart as we went there, because I thought how much he would have enjoyed it. Especially because there are so many mistakes on every Civil War battlefield. It's a series of mistakes, blunders, screw-ups, and that couldn't be more true than what happened at First Manassas, because both sides were fielding troops that were green as grass. You might recall that congressional dignitaries and their spouses and came out to Centerville, Virginia, to watch the battle transpire, to see those heathen rebels get the whooping they properly deserved, so that the war would simply end and everybody could go back to being friends again. And folks committing treason by waging war against the United States thought they would come in and show those blue bellies what for. After all, this was taking place on the sacred soil of old Virginia, and thus the Federals were deemed to be invaders. Didn't work out like either one thought. So we went to the battlefield, and the visitor center for the Manassas battlefield is right there where the hottest part of the action took place. It's called Henry Hill. No, not that Henry Hill. It was a hill that was owned by a family named Henry. And right there outside the visitor center is the location of the Union battery operated by, I think, Captain Ricketts. The visitor center is very nice. It has a little gift shop there, which I went through paying close attention. Well, you know why. You could, in fact, buy a, I believe it was a replica flag of the flag of the United States as it was in 1861. You could not, however, buy a Confederate flag, and I found that uplifting. However, and this is a little, I don't know, maybe this is a little bit shakier ground, the dominant feature there is a humongous black, I would say kind of ugly, larger-than-life monument to Thomas J. Jackson, traitor, who astride his horse, and it's up on a great big granite plinth. I think plinth is the right word, isn't it? And that's roughly the place where he was rallying the Southern troops to push the Federals to flight. Oh, by the way, the little campaign hats, the little kepi hats with the bill, there were lots of those for sale. They were all sold out of the Union caps, for what it's worth. And so we started out, Agnes and I did, by walking around Henry Hill, went into the rebuilt Henry House. They've done a really good job with interpretive stuff to let you know what was happening, what it was like, what was going on. And after we did that, we went and walked along the Union artillery line, which was a paltry 8 field pieces. And then we walked over to the Confederate treason artillery line, where the treasonous young men from Georgia and South Carolina and whatnot had lined up. And then we looked at each other and said, well, you know, it would be kind of nice to see the stone bridge, because that figured prominently, because that's where everything got moving. Okay, so we'll just take the trail. Didn't have a bottle of water with us. Didn't have so much as a bag or a little package of raisins. And so off we went on what was to turn out to be an 8-mile hike in 90-degree weather with not a blessed thing to eat or drink. Because, you know, once you get started, you can't turn back. You got to press on. And so we did. And we saw every aspect of that battlefield. And by the time we were done, we were both dehydrated as hell and just worn the heck out. Still, didn't feel too bad about it, because at 52 years of age to engage in something like that and come out of it pretty much okay, yeah, it was encouraging. And so at the end, and bear in mind, this is the same day, because I kept seeing little updates pop up on my phone. This was the same day that the treason rag had come down in the home of American sedition, to wit, South Carolina. And that kept popping up, and yes, good, 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 good. And by the way, I had, unlike most people who, and certainly all right-wingers who are engaged in this this form of communication, I like to admit when I am corrected and I get stuff wrong, or when I suggest something might go one way and it goes the other. And I am proud to admit that I was wrong, 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 wrong when I said that the legislature of South Carolina stand would not pull down the flag, that filthy scrap of garbage, would not pull it down before their next official legislative session. I was wrong, and I am delighted to have been wrong. They got an initial vote of 37-3 in the Senate, and then they had another vote, and then it went over to the House. It got a little dicier in the House, didn't it? With idiots standing up and saying, I will not stand for the denigration of our proud South Carolina heritage of treason. Well, they didn't say the treason part, but that sort of goes as read, doesn't it? But lo and behold, the damn thing came down. And it just happened to come down on the same day that Agnes and I were hiking around that battlefield. And if you are tuned into what a horror that war was, it's hard to go around that place with a smile on your face and a song in your heart. Because, as Lincoln said at Gettysburg, it is hallowed ground. It was not hallowed by the boys from Georgia or South Carolina, Stan. It was hallowed by those soldiers from the Union Army who gave their all to preserve the Union, which we are desperately trying to hold together even today. And so there were a lot of moments of standing still, because the topography and the tree lines and so forth haven't changed much in the last 154 years or so. And so one tended to be kind of in that moment. And, yeah, I admit to a little mean-spiritedness. The first officer from the Confederacy, the first traitor officer, died at Manassas. His name was Bartow, and he was from South Carolina. And we read his marker, and I looked at Agnes and said, served him right. And then, and there were, you know, there were some things worth noting there. I hope I'm not boring you. We'll get to the Morans in short order. There was another sign, and they're all over the place there. There was another marker that noted one of the deaths that took place. Lieutenant William P. Mangum of the 6th North Carolina, son of Senator Mangum, was mortally wounded here on July 21st, 1861. Historically inaccurate, because Senator Mangum stopped being a senator of the United States before the first shot was fired on this battlefield. So it should properly read, Lieutenant William P. Mangum of the 6th North Carolina, son of the traitor Mangum, was mortally wounded here on July 21st, 1861. I looked at that one and said, served him right, too. And then there was the marker Agnes didn't realize what was on it when she sat down on it for a break, because we were well into the hike. But I walked around and saw it, and it was placed there by some Confederate organization eons ago. This marble marks the spot where fell George T. Stovall of the Rome Light Guards, 8th Regiment Georgia 7th Volunteers, no, 8th Regiment Georgia Volunteers, in the Battle of July 21st, 1861, born at Augusta, Georgia, April 7th, 1835. His life he devoted to his God and sacrificed in his country's defense. His last words were, "I am going to heaven." Well, if we assume for a moment that there is an afterlife, didn't he blink his peepers open in an interesting place? Now, I realize it's non-canonical, but do let's remember that Dante suggests that the deepest, lowest, furthest from God circle of hell is reserved for the betrayers. And, of course, George T. Stovall of the Rome Light Guards, 8th Regiment Georgia Volunteers, betrayed his country. He didn't die for it. He betrayed it. We walked a little ways further, and there was a place where the 4th Alabama was, fighting for slavery. But there were little things along the way that proved quite informative. One soldier from Georgia, Private B.M. Zettler, also of the 8th Georgia, said in the heat of that first great battle, "I felt that I was in the presence of death. My first thought was, this is unfair. Somebody is to blame for getting us all killed. I didn't come out here to fight this way. I wish the earth would crack open and let me drop in." I imagine a bunch of young men were asking that question. Could very well be that Private B.M. Zettler of the 8th Georgia Infantry had never owned a human being in his life and probably spent a great deal of his time dirt farming, just trying to survive from one season to the next, as did so many of the soldiers who decided to take up arms against their country. But nonetheless, they were enticed to do so. And the question arises, how were they enticed to do so? And lo and behold, the answer was right there, in the form of a reproduction of a recruiting poster from Tennessee. Because when you think about it, well, I don't know. Mark Twain tells us that it is not very difficult at all to get young men to sign up and put on a uniform and go marching off to what they think is going to be a glorious conflict. He makes reference to it, for instance, in the War Prayer. And Mark Twain himself, as a young man who was at the time just merely Samuel Langhorn Clemens, signed on with a bunch of Confederate wannabes, his pals from Hannibal, there in Missouri. And he documents it in a piece called A Brief History of a Campaign That Failed. And he ran, after two or three nights out in the woods, he ran as fast as he could get his feet to carry him away from that madness. And Abraham Lincoln appoints his brother Orion to a federal post in the Nevada Territory, and young Sam follows Orion on out, and therein begins the majesty of, quite frankly, the most wondrous career ever in American letters. But he got suckered in. And I guess it's easy to, especially with young men, barely more than boys, in some case, still boys. To get pulled into the madness. But for those who took some convincing, the propaganda was hard to resist. This particular recruiting poster comes from Morristown, Tennessee. And in great bold letters, all caps, Freeman of Tennessee, and Freeman and Tennessee both have exclamation points. They're all in caps, so it's very much like a modern-day posting from a teabagger. And dear God, didn't we see the melon washers out in force? Oh, there were a lot of melon washers out there, cantaloupe cleaners, I call them, wandering around the battlefield. I think they go there with a sort of masturbatory, pornographic urge to, I sure wish we could get away from being Americans. You know, the melon washers, the cantaloupe cleaners, the guys that walk around with the T-shirts that say, Melon Lave. I think that means wash melon. But anyway, Freeman of Tennessee. The Yankee War is now being waged for beauty and booty. No, really. They have driven us from them and now say our trade they must and will have. We didn't drive. No, the Union didn't drive the South out. The Union didn't open up at Fort Sumter and fire on Charleston. No. Driven us from them. Bullshit. They have driven us from them and now say our trade they must and will have. So there's the appeal to wealth. To excite their hired and ruffian soldiers. Hired and ruffian soldiers, yeah. Because you know, that's what they were. Hired ruffians marching away from farms in Minnesota and Michigan and Iowa and Wisconsin. Because there was no living to be had in that rich soil. To excite their hired and ruffian soldiers, they promise them our lands and tell them our women are beautiful. That beauty is the reward of the brave. And there's the other prong of the appeal. They're coming after our women's. Tennesseans, your country calls. Shall we wait until our homes are laid desolate, until sword and rape have visited them? Never! Then to arms! And let us meet the enemy on the borders. Who so vile, so craven, as to not strike for his native land? Of course, their native land was the United States of America. Oh, well. But there you go. You're a coward. You're craven. You're vile. If you don't join up and fight a bunch of millionaire slave owners war to defend their white women and their wealth. Because you're a dirt farmer, remember? The undersigned proposes to immediately raise an infantry company to be offered to the governor as part of the defense of the state and of the Confederate states. All those who desire to join with us in serving our common country will report themselves immediately. J.B. Murray, H.C. Witt, May 17th, 1861, Neal and Roberts Printers, Morristown, Tennessee. And that is how you get young M.B. Zettler with the bullets and the cannonade whistling over his head, wishing the earth would crack open and swallow him whole. And so it is ever the same, I suppose. A rich man's war and a poor man's fight. And a little bit of a postscript. At the end of that hike, with the news having broken that South Carolina had finally taken down that ensign of open rebellion against the lawful government of the United States of America, I sat there, catching my breath, sweating like a dog. Dogs don't sweat. Sweating like a pig. Pigs don't sweat. Sweating like a human. Looking out at that big old ugly monument to a traitor, Thomas J. Jackson, whose mama, Julia Beckwith Neal, it was or is, not sure which, interred about in the dirt about 2 miles from me. That big old ugly statue of him astride his horse, calling and rallying his troops to slaughter men of their own country in open war against a country to whom he, Thomas Jackson, had once sworn military allegiance, oath breakers one and all. Ninth circle of hell. But as I sat there, something kind of wondrous happened. Now, if you're a long-time listener to this program, you know better than to think that you're going to get any kind of mysticism or religion here. But every now and then, it's hard. Every now and then, circumstances present themselves, which kind of make you go, hmm. And that's how it was on Friday, the 10th day of July, 2015, as evening pressed on, because our hike took all damn day. We didn't run it. We walked it, and sometimes pretty slowly. But with the visitor center and the gift shop closed, with the sun lowering in the sky, that big old statue of Thomas Jackson out in front of me, I saw something that made me wonder if maybe there isn't something out there that's paying attention. Because it was otherwise one of the most delightful coincidences ever I have experienced. Because I'd spent the day sort of pondering what it would take to compel a person to commit treason against his own country. Because that's a pretty grave undertaking. And horrifying. There were plenty of officers from the South who didn't commit treason against their country and remained true to their oaths to the United States military. George Thomas, that Mr. Stress used to talk about, that was his personal favorite. But on that day, when that filthy rag came down in South Carolina, as I sat there watching it in the sidelong light that is the most beautiful light of the day on a day when nothing but high, white, fluffy clouds had flown past. Buzzards, of all things, began to circle near above, about 50 feet, maybe, 75, that statue of Thomas J. Jackson. There wasn't so much as a dead bunny, there wasn't a dead squirrel, there wasn't a dead snake, there wasn't a dead anything. Because I went and looked. Anywhere near. I mean, there wasn't a dropped McDonald's hamburger, which, by the way, no self-respecting buzzard would land on. There wasn't anything to draw a buzzard. No carrion. Except for, dare I say it, the spiritual carrion of a man who committed treason against his own country. Buzzards circling a representation of Thomas J. Stonewall Jackson, who, in the aftermath of the Battle of Chancellorsville, died the traitor that he was. By the way, that was another one of the historical mistakes inside the visitor center. It said that the Civil War claimed the lives of more than 600,000 Americans. It did not. And I politely made note of it to the person at the desk. It took the lives of some 300,000 Americans and 300,000 people who died Confederates. Now, those who survived the conflict eventually, by the good graces of this country, were allowed to reaffirm their allegiance to this nation and were readmitted to citizenship. And they themselves admitted, acknowledged by their signature, that they were not citizens of the United States when they took up arms against it. That they had renounced their citizenship. But that's one to pay attention to because it gets around 600,000 Americans. Bull. Bull Run. And I don't say that as someone with a pedigree that is strictly Union. I have every bit as many ancestors who fought on the side of the South and became traitors as I do those who fought on the side of the Union and remained loyal. It is a galling thing to know that treason resides in one's family tree. And I am grateful to the framers of the Constitution who said in that document that there would be no ex post facto laws, no bills of attainder, and that there would be no working of corruption of the blood. Because, see, that's how it used to be in merry old England and Rome. If one was convicted of treason, so were one's children and one's wife. And so everyone was stripped of everything. While the principal committer of treason was executed. But it felt like a sign of some sort. And I admit that that is wholly irrational and entirely without any sort of reason-based process. Those two things came together for me. I looked up, I saw those buzzards circling Stonewall Jackson, and realized that that awful, awful, awful banner had come down finally in South Carolina. And realized that perhaps, maybe, the time had come or had arrived when we could finally begin to deal honestly and openly with that and other of our great national shames. Now, we do have More Ann Monday yet to delve into, and oh, sweet Jesus, do we have More Anns. And you're welcome to participate in any way you see fit. Lines, one line is open, one line is busy at the moment, 304-663-4676, 304-663-HORN is open to you as we speak. If you want to jump into the conversation, you are more than welcome. Kate with a note. The buzzards were scoping out you two. Don't ever go without water. Welcome home, both of you. They weren't scoping out us. We were too hale and too hearty. No, I much prefer to think that they were maybe sending a little sign about the futility of all. I mean, imagine that. Imagine the futility of a life lost on a battlefield wherein one is defending the right of one rich white man to own a whole lot of people of color. It's the very definition, isn't it? Yeah. So jump into the conversation. Of course, if you want to reach out on Facebook, you know, Bob Kincaid. If you want to reach out via email, bobkincaid@gmail.com. On Twitter, @BobKincaid. I sure do like saying Bob Kincaid. And we'll take a little break and come back and delve, perhaps, into the More Anns. This is listener-supported conversation radio. It is radio that you make happen. And we have got, let me see here, oh, for crying out loud, Luda. 167 dollars and 62 cents to go. Did I do that? Did I get it right? I have no idea. Ciphering in my head is not my strong suit. But anyway, this is listener-supported conversation radio. This is The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid.
You said it was your duty, yours to fulfill. You joined the peacetime army, it's no longer a drill. Take a look around. If you have any doubts, to free the world from tyranny is what this is about. And they say it's gonna take some time. Every day there's one less of you in line. You are the sons and daughters of the working class, ordinary people with a monumental task. But the world isn't patient, knowing little of your pain. They hold you to a standard themselves they can't sustain. And at home, the pundits start to spin. Politicians and all men cash in. themselves to sleep at night. Corporations get in line, there's contracts to write. The rich man's war and the poor man's fight. God bless your blood, God bless your sacrifice, God bless the innocents that died in the fight. There's hell on the horizon, fire on the earth, time to tell the truth. What is this worth? And the children that today are playing games, conscription, tomorrow calls their names. Widows and orphans cry themselves to sleep at night. Corporations get in line, there's contracts to write. Widows and orphans cry themselves to sleep at night. Corporations get in line, there's contracts to write. Rich man's war and a poor man's fight. Rich man's war and a poor man's fight.
Applicable to almost any circumstance of warfare. John Koontz. Rich Man's War. Going back to 2004. It comes from an album called Accessory to the Crime. Let's run over and check out the phones. I suspect we have John with us. Is that you, John?
No, this is Carol in Las Vegas.
Oh, Carol, well, I haven't heard from you, and, well, golly gee, it's good to hear from you. I was just guessing,
yeah.
I was guessing by the area code.
I'm still out here, just, you know, a little quieter these days, I guess. But, before I get to the two points I want to get to, you know, when we bring up, and, you guys have been talking from time to time about Ronald Reagan and his, absent memory. Jack Tremond, I don't know if you remember him.
I do.
He wrote a book called A Fat Man in the Middle Seat, 40 Years of Political Reporting. And when he interviewed Ronald Reagan when he was governor a couple of times. And what's funny about it is in his book, he says that when he would come in, Lynn Nofsinger, his chief of staff, would always say, Governor, this is Jack Tremond. You remember Jack, don't you? Also, because it was pretty obvious that Reagan couldn't remember anybody's name.
Right.
But I think that's a pretty good indication that Ronald Reagan's Alzheimer was probably well on its way even before he became President of the United States.
I think that was an open secret among his nearest advisors. But see, He was just a vehicle for what a lot of other nasty people wanted to accomplish, Carol.
Absolutely. And, you know, it's funny you bring that up because he said in his book also, the little joke in his own, you know, Reagan's own office was that when Lynn would take Reagan home at night, he would say, Governor, this is Nancy. You remember Nancy, don't you? But so as you said, it was no secret within his own people. But, you know, the other day, I think it was your last Friday on the front porch, Larry brought up Bernie Ward.
Yeah.
And I think there's something that we need to think about a little bit with him. As you recall, Scott Ritter, when he was over in Iraq investigating weapons of mass destruction and then was later kicked out and became a very, you know, strong advocate against that war.
Oh yeah.
You remember what he got busted for?
Yeah, they tried to slime him with a sex charge.
Yeah, actually it was underage girls on his computer. And you know, I just bring that up because it seems like a awful coincidence that here you have these two guys, and Bernie was really going after, because I used to listen to him, And he was really going after the Iraq War and Bush and the administration very strongly. So I just think it's could be a little more than a coincidence that both of them, you know, got busted.
But I remember Carol at one of the Seneca 2 meetings that took place down in the Kanawha Valley. They had Scott Ritter in to deliver a lecture one night.
Mm-hmm.
And he was at a question that I posed. He answered that evening that he used to say that the United States was getting perilously near fascism. He said, but I don't say that anymore. He said, I say that we are in it.
I remember that.
But the charges that they tried to pin on him, and I think they were done pretty, you know, it was pretty obvious that they were that they were you know, cooking something up. They didn't stick. I don't remember them sticking. Do you?
Well, he, as I recall, with Scott Ritter, it was very hush hush, and they were dropped, but he couldn't comment on why or anything. And, you know, also along that same line, when Tommy Chong of Cheech and Chong was busted for his
Chong's bombs,
you know, glass bomb business, you know, he wrote a book, which I read, of his experience in the federal penitentiary and that whole thing. And he said that the reason he didn't fight it was, and he just kind of said, okay, I'll do the 9 months, 10 months of federal prison, whatever, was because they threatened to go after his son and his wife if he fought it.
Right, and that's
so I'm just saying that
that's a typical prosecution tactic.
Mm-hmm.
You know that.
So I just think that, you know, while I certainly don't know if the charges against Bernie Ward are true or not true, I just think that it's a little bit of a coincidence that anybody that went up against the Bush administration in the Iraq War publicly. They had a few problems.
Well, where Bernie Ward's concerned, and I'm not offering a critique of his philosophy or his politics or his talent even, but from what I read of the court proceedings, he owned up to what he did because he wasn't wasn't tried and found guilty. He pled. And,
well, again, I'm not saying that. Possibly it isn't true. I'm just saying that I don't know, as a suspicious person, maybe there were other threats. You know what I'm saying?
I do. And, of course, we would be remiss, you and I both, in touching on the I don't want to call them judicial excesses, the vindictive excesses of the reign of error of dim leader, if we did not bring up in this same conversation Don Siegelman. Don Siegelman is he is the absolute definition of a malicious, vile, cooked up prosecution job. That there's no contention now by anyone who is paying attention. That was cooked up in the mind of Turd Blossom, you know.
Well, I think that's a very good point. That's a very good point. So I'm just saying that I guess I just hold out a slight possibility that maybe Bernie Ward falls into that. That's all I'm saying.
Well, he's not on the air. He's not on the air anymore. And if the point was to get him off the air, and if there was something. You know, subtextual, then it accomplished its goal. And in point of fact, there were a lot of people who were run off the air during that era who were trying to get something going. Wasn't there another progressive talker maybe in Portland? Who had a bunch of problems. I can't bring the name to mind, but it wound up. God, I can't. I remember the barest details. But there was all sorts of machinations going on. And as outfits like Clear Channel, consolidated their stranglehold on media, Carol, they just about did manage to run progressive radio off the air. You might remember, for instance, that Air America was their operating strategy, deeply flawed though it was to rent time or buy time from radio stations, many of which were owned by Clear Channel, so that you would, so that back in its absolute heyday, you would have Al Franken up against Bill O'Reilly. Well, the next thing you heard was that station was flipping to sports talk, or all Latino all the time, or gospel radio, anything to make sure that the progressive format and the progressive point of view would not be heard. There was the very famous memo that came out through Clear Channel advising advising people, not stations and businesses. It was advising businesses not to buy time on Air America programming.
Mm-hmm. Well, again, I think that those are all great points, and I just think that whoever challenged them, and especially the lead up to and in the beginning of the Iraq War, was vulnerable. But the other thing I kind of wanted to bring up, you know, we've been talking about Hillary Clinton, and obviously we're going to be talking about Hillary Clinton for some time to come. But, and, you know, whatever my opinions are is not what's important, but I think that what we need to look at really seriously with Hillary Clinton is that other Democrats that I know besides myself are really having a hard time thinking about voting for her. And it's not, you know, offhand comments or anything like that. With her, you know, her connection now with Wall Street, with her daughter marrying a billionaire derivatives family and things like that. But sometimes I think, whether it's on this program or another program or two, I think we need to take a little more seriously when people say that, you know, I'm just not sure I can vote for her. And someone like myself, who's voted for the Democrat ever since, you know, I'll be 62 in November, ever since McGovern, you know what I mean? And I'm sure you probably happened to catch the little wedding between the Rothschild guy and Nikki Hilton.
No, I didn't, and wow.
Oh, okay, Nikki Hilton married one of the Rothschild sons, the younger one. And what's interesting is,
and that's,
guess who
that's
was
Paris's
at the wedding?
That's Paris's baby sister, right?
Yeah, Paris Hilton's sister. Well, guess who was in attendance at that wedding?
Who?
Chelsea Clinton.
Why am I not surprised? I mean, wealth moves with wealth, doesn't it?
Exactly. Well, I bring it up because, you know, I'm really disturbed at how Hillary Clinton is now trying to be, you know, a liberal or someone who cares about working people and stuff like this. And again, it's not so much my dislike for her or where, you know, what she's become with her wealth and who she hangs out with. But a lot of, and I know that even on your program, I know that Todd made a comment about 2 weeks ago saying he didn't think he could vote for Hillary Clinton and some other people on the program. And I think that's a warning, don't you think?
I have a hard time with that phraseology, Carol, just because I don't want to go over there where the right wing lives, and the next thing you know, it's the MENA airport and the Clinton conspiracy and some Indiana congressman's out in his backyard shooting watermelons to prove that Hillary killed Vince Foster.
Oh, I totally agree with you, and you know I voted for Bill Clinton both times.
For me, the larger issue, and you know, among other things, I'll say this much. I heard over the weekend that the American Federation of Teachers had gone ahead and endorsed Senator Secretary Clinton, her campaign for the Democratic nomination. I thought that I thought that was a mistake. I think the smart money is in a primary contest is to wait and see who the people. I mean, at least if you're on the Democratic side, which is supposed to be Democratic, wait and see what the people want. Wait and see what the rank and file want. But because what they think Bernie Sanders is an enemy of teachers, really?
Well,
and
Bernie's numbers
are growing, and he's getting real excitement out on the hustings. I mean, my God, the man went down. This shouldn't sound sensational, but in a way it is. It's one thing for us to say, well, 10,000 people showed up to see Bernie in Minneapolis. There's a big progressive base in Minnesota, right? Or that he drew, you know, a couple of thousand in at a couple of different places in Iowa. They got real Democrats there. But this one grabbed me earlier today. Bernie showed up at the Good People Brewing Company in Birmingham, Alabama.
Mm-hmm.
I'll say again, Birmingham, Alabama, and 300 people showed up at a little brew pub. One of the people cited by AL.com is 40-year-old Elizabeth Hewitt of Blount County, Alabama. And she said that never before has she felt like her vote mattered, because she's never heard a candidate message that made sense within her own values until she heard Bernie. And she said, I didn't like either candidate. I didn't care who won because I felt it didn't matter. And another guy, Peter Stewart, 56 years old, of Lincoln, Alabama. I'm surprised they allowed a town to be named Lincoln. 56-year-old Peter Stewart said, he's not just in it for the money or his own career. To me, he's what politicians should be. And then someone raised the socialist issue, you know. That's going to get real tiresome real fast, isn't it, Carol? This Peter Stewart guy said, you know, I think Jesus was a socialist. Because, well, the way he's portrayed in the Gospels, he was.
Well, you know, that's a really good point. And it's pretty amazing how quickly, you know, Bernie Sanders is really connecting with people who probably never heard of him or really never heard of him speak. And I'm certainly, you know, behind Bernie all the way. It's pretty refreshing, you know, it's someone of my age that actually is hearing somebody really go after Wall Street, really going after the big banks. That's very unusual, and that's something, unfortunately, we're never going to hear Hillary Clinton say. But I'll be interested in the months to come in listening to your program and other programs, and just, you know, I work in a big hotel casino in Las Vegas and hearing people talk. And, you know, I'm trying to turn people on to Bernie Sanders at work myself. But just, it's going to be interesting to see how it works out, because as we know, Wall Street doesn't want Bernie, the big banks don't want Bernie, the corporate heads don't want Bernie, the corporate media doesn't want Bernie, so I mean, he's got an uphill climb.
I don't think anybody has said anything otherwise. By the way, a little postscript on that Alabama appearance, Carol, you might find this interesting. One, they organized it through Facebook. It was a bunch of Facebook people who were following and supporting Bernie, and when they set the thing up, they expected 30 people. They got 10 times as many. And you know, as we do go forward through the process, there's a sense among Democrats and I won't even necessarily limit it to progressive Democrats. You hear the dynasty talk about, you know, do we really need another Bush or another Clinton? Mm-hmm. And I'm not engaged by that. Because if that was the metric, then FDR would have been out by default. Do we really need another Roosevelt?
Mm-hmm.
So that doesn't really do anything for me. But there's a feeling of same old about both Hillary and Jebbia. And so while I don't see me for the remainder of this long and nightmarish, miserable campaign process that we're forced to deal with, you know, I don't see me delivering any anti-Hillary Jeremiads, okay? I'm not going to get my hair on fire about it because the odds are long, Carol. And frankly,
I agree.
And I know that there are a bunch of hardcore progressives out there saying, oh, hell no, I'll go vote for Jill Stein because I'm going to take my freedom-protecting gun and shoot myself right in the foot. And that's okay. That's okay. But for my part, if I look at Senator Secretary Clinton, I'll say this much. She is miles better than Jebbia. And she's miles better than Scott Walker, who, by the way, I guess the word finally reached the Koch brothers in the last couple of days that he wasn't going to be indicted, so they told him he could run for president, and hence the announcement.
Yeah, I saw that. No big surprise there.
Trump, I want to hear some of the really, really hardcore, rabid, frothing-at-the-mouth, so-called left anti-Hillary people. I really want them to tell me that if Donald Trump is the nominee, they're going to vote for Jill Stein. Because I want the rationale that goes with that, too. We don't want a dynasty. Really? You'd rather have Trump than a dynasty.
Well, you know,
for you, you know?
It gives me no joy to kind of say negative things about Hillary Clinton, with, you know, now that she has a son-in-law who's the father of her granddaughter, who's, you know, connected to a derivatives company worth billions of dollars. You know, it doesn't give me any joy, but I'm just being honest when I say that, you know, I'm really having a problem with it. And it's early. A lot can happen between now and then. I just think we have to take really seriously people's opinion and how they feel about what Hillary has become. You know, I think she's very different than when she was the first lady, personally, because, you know, they're different people. They have different lives. They have different incomes, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, they do. And, I mean, I'm being asked in the chat room, for instance, miles better. In what way is Hillary miles better than any of those people I mentioned? Well, let's see. It is abundantly clear that she's not going to knuckle a woman's right to choose. She's right on the marriage issue. There's not a single Republican candidate for president who has said that the Supreme Court got it right. They're all babbling about five black-robed unelected judgemises, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yes, there's the ever-present Supreme Court argument. There's my own little favorite, the 2020 census argument. And there's also that whole, I don't expect the Congress to change much in the next election. So, oh, goody, how's about we have Scott Walker and a Republican House and a Republican Senate and a more often than not Republican majority on the Supreme Court? That's going to work out great. Plus, it'll be safe, you know, with a President Trump or a President or a President Walker or a President Bush or a President Paul or a president, any of those goons, it'll be okay if Clarence Slappy and Uncle Nino and the Kennedy kid, it'll be okay if they decide they want to retire because there'll be a Republican majority in the Senate that'll whoosh anybody right through from the Federalist Society that one of those right-wing jackanapes nominates. Disagree?
And you know, those are all great points, and they're all true. And, you know, in the end, again, I'm a realist. There's a long way to go. How I'll react when I get in the voting booth, and I would never vote for a Republican, obviously. I'm a hardcore animal lover, a hardcore environmentalist, a hardcore just about everything when it comes to being on the left. But it's just a little scary that I'm just seeing so many people, and even on your own program, who've talked and you know, come in through email or through Facebook or whatever, people just don't like Hillary. And I think there's some good reasons for it. But
I will be the first, and I said I wasn't going to engage in any Hillary bashing, and I hope this isn't taken as such, Carol. But, you know, I'll say this much, and I say it with a caveat. Most people now generally agree, would you not say, that, and especially with the remarks he made in Charleston at the memorial for the nine slain innocents from Mother Emanuel, wouldn't you agree that Barack Obama gives a pretty good speech?
Oh, of course. You know,
that of course, Carol, was not always there, and I am witness to it. I was in Charleston, West Virginia at the Jefferson Jackson Day dinner, oh dear God, maybe 2006, 2007, when at the behest of Robert C. Byrd, Barack Obama came to Charleston to deliver the keynote address. And somewhere in all these hard drives, there is an actual recording of it, and I am here to tell you that it was awful. I mean, beyond awful. Terrible. Abysmal. Miserable. A real clock stopper. Not a stem winder, but a clock stopper. And so we've certainly seen that change. And I say that as prologue, Carol, to the idea that candidates can learn out on the campaign trail. In fact, if they don't, they get beaten. And maybe Secretary Senator Clinton will. But I will agree with you. By my estimation, okay, and I realize this is unfair and subjective, but she's awful hard to listen to speechify. And that has nothing
Very
to do,
true.
That has nothing to do with gender. It has nothing to do with being a Clinton. It has nothing to do with the fact that she's financed by and aligned with Wall Street and the big banks.
Mm-hmm.
It has to do with just some people have different talents from other people. One of the things that propelled Bill along was the fact that when all else failed, he could work the rope line and charm the socks off a snake. Okay? He's that guy. Hillary is not that woman. Hillary is policy.
No,
Hillary's policy. Hillary is rulemaking. But so far she has not shown me that she is capable of working up a crowd. And I'm sure somewhere there's some middle of the road Democrat going, well, he is bashing Hillary. No, I'm not.
No, you're not.
No, it's
you know, you're not
just
bashing somebody watching, by speaking the truth.
Watching her give a speech is like watching paint dry.
I know.
And I know. even when she gets worked up, and I feel like I'm verging over into very dangerous territory here. Even when you watch her get worked up, it's like she's looking at her notes and there's a parenthesis in the script and it says, sound like you're getting worked up here, close paren. And like I said, that is subjective as hell. And if anybody disagrees, I'm okay with it. And they can even call in and disagree. That's fine. If you've heard her give a speech and she has moved you to the core of your being and all the way down to your toenails, good. That means that it's just my perception, which is all I'm offering as in the first place.
Well, I think that's my point, Bob. If someone like yourself, as well-informed and as bright on the issues as you saying the things you're saying, then that's exactly what my point is. It is that people who are progressives, Democrats, liberals, whatever, you know, after the last 25, 30 years since the Reagan administration, you know, we're a little tired of on the big issues, are people not coming through. So I think, like you're saying, these are legitimate problems. These are legitimate questions. And I certainly don't want to see the scenario that you said about, you know, a Supreme Court, House and Senate, and a president, not only Republicans, but right-wing idiots. I don't want to see that. But will Hillary, you know, be able to grow into a better campaigner in the next year? And will she be able to pull it off? That's what I'm saying.
Yeah. There are two schools of thought here. You know, it's like the old saying, there are two kinds of people in this world, those who think there are two. No. There's two schools. Carol? Well, this is strange.
Hello?
Oh, yeah. Some people think that there is there's been such a long period of time in which the right wing has built its Hillary-hating machine that it's going to be a juggernaut. Other people, and I've received emails along this line, say that the worst possible thing that could happen in 2016 would be for Bernie to get the nomination because they think that Bernie would just get McGoverned at the polls. Does that make sense?
Well, those are legitimate points to be discussed.
Yeah. And God bless our system. We've got, let's see, 11 minus 7. Yeah, we got 16 months to do that in, too, right?
Yeah. Well, you know, I don't want to tie up the line too long, but, you know, I'll be interested to hear if anybody else, you know, wants to chime in on this in the days and weeks to come, and I'm sure they will. But, I don't know, when I saw that Chelsea Clinton attended, you know, the wedding at the palace of a Rothschild, my ears perked up.
Mine do too. And I mean, I remember when she went to attend the ribbon cutting or the groundbreaking on a Goldman Sachs building at the same time that, what was it, subway workers were on strike in New York City. And that kind of told me where the bread was buttered.
Mm-hmm. Well, and let me just leave you with this. In my opinion, Bernie Sanders is not the same as McGovern. I don't believe.
Well, I don't think so either. And I think the social dynamics are dramatically different too, Carol, because there's no Vietnam War going on. There's still an Afghan mm-hmm. war, and there's the possibility of, I mean, this, I don't know how much you've seen in the news, but last week I would catch a little bit along the way, and there's a, you know, there's the same steady drumbeat that's been going for the last 15 years for a sure enough hotted up real good war with Iran. And by the way, one of the things I neglected to mention in the filibuster was that I had a brush with if not greatness then fearfulness, because we were loping along through the basement corridor that runs between Russell and Dirksen, and lo and behold, clippity clopping, just as fast as his little old feet would carry him, here come Lindsey Graham, just walked right past us, and he's a little old tiny feller. I mean, just a little bit, and in that moment, you know, America does not elect short presidents, and this would be like electing a hobbit, okay? Clippity-clopping,
yeah.
And I started reaching my pockets to see if I had my smelling salts with me in case he fainted on the spot or anything, like he, you know, maybe he'd see an ISIS Ebola person or something lurking around the corner, but no, he didn't, and I just wanted to kind of rub his little old ball spot just to ward off the ISIS evil eye. But they're itching for war, and that's another reason. And I know. Just ask the far left; they'll tell you Hillary's a warmonger, and maybe she is. But again, I don't think she's half the warmonger that Scott Walker is. Scott Walker says that says that pissing on working people shows the America that he's got the nerve to stand up to ISIS. He compared union members, and you're a union member, right, Carol? He compared union he compared union members to ISIS.
Well, you know, Walker is just a complete moron. I mean, he would go, he wouldn't be able to even get where he is without all the money from the Koch brothers. But anyway, once again, I want to let some other people in. But, you know, it's good to talk to you again after a while. And
it's been way too long. I hope we talk again soon, and I'm glad to know you're still out there.
Okay. Well, hey, you take it easy.
All right. Be good, Carol. Bye now.
Okay, bye.
Have not heard from Carol out in Vegas in a long time. I just saw the 702 area code and made an assumption it was John, but no, lo and behold, it was Carol. And so, there's probably a lot of you who've never heard from Carol before. He's a good conversation. Tim from L.A. notes, Hillary sounds worse than an attorney giving a closing statement. I used to nod off while I was on jury duty. Then you had a bad lawyer, Tim. You were watching a bad lawyer practice, because a good lawyer in a closing argument, opening statement, closing argument, a good lawyer in a closing argument will have the jury on the edge of its seats and practically eating out of her hand. Yeah. Let's see. It is about 8 minutes before the hour, and you are welcome to join in the conversation if you want to address anything that Carol brought up or anything that I brought up. You are more than welcome so to do. Both lines are open, 304-574-8178 or 304-663-HORN, 304-663-4676. Skype to Skype is Bob Kincaid Horn, BobKincaidHorn. And that's free from anywhere on the planet. And by the way, the storm has passed, and everything's calmed down outside. I'm sure it'll be humid as here pretty soon. We remain under a flash flood warning, not a watch, but a warning, until 10:30 or so tonight. So lucky for us, we're on relatively high ground. My grandmother was no dummy when she sighted this place. She just didn't know that she was building her house on a high ground that was on top of a spring that bubbles up through the basement no matter what the hell we do. Oh, well. So, yeah, 7 minutes before the hour, and it is Moran Monday, and I am tickled pink to be back and back at it. Note from Jack in Shreveport, Hillary has not supported reinstating Glass-Steagall, but has said she will prosecute Wall Streeters if they break any laws. I very much doubt prosecuting a Wall Streeter would make any difference in any working person's life, but many people lost their homes due to lack of regulation, snark, Jack says. Well, one, Hillary ain't gonna prosecute anybody. If she wins the nomination and the election, she's gonna be president of the United States, not attorney general. And I'm not snarking back at Jack. I mean, that's just a fact, Jack. Ooh, hey. But I guess what she's saying is that she'll tell the Department of Justice to do its job. But, see, I think there's something operating here that maybe we don't fully take into account. And that, frankly, neither Bernie Sanders nor Hillary Clinton, and God knows no Republican, is going to do anything about. And that is the fundamental way that we punish corporate wrongdoers. We don't send them to prison. We punish the corporation, and you can't send a corporation to prison, at least not under our system. We impose a fine upon them, usually by virtue of a consent decree, whereby the corporation's board says, yeah, well, all right, we'll plead guilty. Okay, well, damn, we'll pay $52 million if that'll make you go away. And then they laugh back to the boardroom, all the way back to the boardroom, and then all the way to the bank, they laugh. Because guess what? when they pay the fine for the corporate felony, whatever it is that they've committed, they get to write it off their taxes. Oh, good work if you can get it. Which is precisely my point, Gerald. Gerald noting, don't you mean the way we don't punish corporate criminals? Precisely. I mean, it's going to be something because it's slated to start later this month in about a week. We shall see whether it does or not. But Don Blankenship is going to be in the dock for actions that gave rise to a culture of corruption that led to the incineration of 29 human beings at the Upper Big Branch mine. And it's I don't know what maybe Carol could check out the odds for us in Vegas. By the way, Vegas is Don Blankenship's new home. I'd love to know what the odds are on him getting convicted. I don't even know. Is it legal to bet on a criminal trial's outcome? Sure, people were betting on the outcome of the OJ trial, weren't they? I mean, for instance, talk about people doing the perp walk. Think about Bernie Madoff, and Bernie Madoff was just a money hustler out working on his own. He wasn't Bernie Madoff of Goldman Sachs or Bernie Madoff of J.P. Morgan Chase. No, he was just Bernie Madoff, con man. But he ripped off the 1%, and so therefore, yes, by God, he is never going to see the outside of the prison. Because he offended the money. Remember the three M's that I identified for us of the legal system in this country. Manage the morons. Punish the mean ones. And above all, protect the money. That's the three M's of the legal system in the United States. And probably most other places when you get right down to it. So, let's put it this way. I want to put this in the plainest possible terms. If Jill Stein, if the Earth stops rotating on its axis and stops revolving around the sun, and pigs fly into the trees, and sheep start writing Shakespeare, and a Green Party candidate is elected to the presidency, Jill Stein, whose positions I respect and like. But if all those things happen and she gets elected president, guess what? She can't send any Wall Streeters to prison either. It is baked in. It is a flaw, not a feature, of the system. Me? I think it would be nice to get a bunch of legislators together. Oh, I don't even know why I'm going any further than this. Get a bunch of legislators together and come up with a corporate death penalty bill. You know, it is conceivable to deal what is called the death penalty to a corrupt college athletic team. You know, let's say that some kid who's never had two $10 bills to rub together in his life gets a $100 handshake after a football game. Well, you do that enough times, and by God, we will deal the death penalty to the football program as long as it's not Notre Dame. Right? Well, we can't do that. We can't do that to, yeah, I know, and a bunch of you are going, or Florida State, or Alabama! But we can't do that to a corporation. And frankly, it is the only thing that will ever keep those bastards honest. I mean, I do believe in the idea of punishment as a deterrent to crime. And notice I deliberately use the word believe. It may not be supported by evidence. But I can't help thinking, if J.P. Gottrocks, president of the Board of Amalgamated Pollution, thought that he might do some hard time, or maybe get the death penalty himself, since we're a country that's into that, that maybe that would make some of these corporate excesses a little less excessive. But just to wrap up on what I was saying about Don Blankenship, the sucker's going to go on trial. But he's not going to go on trial, and I think I've mentioned this before. In fact, I know I have. He's not going to go on trial for killing not even one of the 29 people who died because of his merciless, remorseless, rapacious greed. He is going on trial for playing fast and loose with mining regulations and mining laws and safety laws. It's the same principle behind how Al Capone was finally taken down. Al Capone was never punished for a single murder that he committed or had committed, ordered committed. He was punished for tax evasion. And I suppose we're supposed to be happy with that, right? Right. By the way, just to sort of expand the scope of our consideration, a note coming in from Robert in Australia. New Horizons arrives at Pluto in approximately 23 hours. Robert says, I'm so excited. And I am too. I've been following that. I think it's just cool. Meanwhile, back on Earth, as you came on this morning, the local power grid went down. You must draw a lot of power. Robert says, sent from my backup location, the local shopping center. Oh, God, and speaking of Moran Monday, this is a little Australian Moran nomination. I saw this on John Fox's feed on Facebook. Oh, my God. They call themselves the Liberal government, but they're not. They're conservatives. They're, you know, the right-wing party in Australia, have put out guidelines for how their tax cut plan will make all lives of every Australian ever so much better. And this is hilarious. They cite a woman, and I could hear John Fox cackling fit to lay eggs all the way over here. They cite a woman who makes $300,000 a year as a musician in Australia. Who would that be? But much as is the case here in West Virginia, where a man who hopes to be governor of the state named Bill Cole said that people who make have union jobs and make $60,000 a year earn an unfairly high wage. The conservative right-wing government in Australia thinks that people who are faking their way through castles made of sand in some bar in Brizzy are bringing down $300 large a year. It is an American disease, and it has metastasized all over the country. One other thing before I do go to the phones. You're still there, aren't you? Good. A little note. If you missed Dr. Bill O'Brien's program this afternoon, A, he will be back tomorrow at 1:30 p.m., and you're going to want to follow up. But you want to go and get the podcast or archive file for today, because Dr. Bill began to try to sort of deconstruct the Greek debt crisis. And I thought he did a magnificent job. And by the way, Dr. Bill is now on Facebook. Look up O'Brien A. William or O'Brien William A. and look up Virtual Center for the Study of the Constitution and Civic Responsibility. Like the latter and friend up with the former. You'll be glad you did. And so now, over to the stress line. Hey, welcome to the program.
Well, I kept hearing my name being abused. So
yeah, I took your name in vain. I saw the area code, and I made certain assumptions, and, well, you know what happens when you do that.
Hey, well, Tom. You know, you call the devil, and what do you get? Yeah, we'll figure. But, the subject matter is very interesting, and it's like the whole grief thing. You know, it kind of dovetails into your last caller's conversation so well. I mean, the Greek people voted for democracy when you hit 60% plus. That's considered a landslide. That's considered an ass whipping. The people have spoken.
Right.
They didn't want to play around with this debt business. They wanted to get out from under it. They wanted to hold on to their own sovereignty. And then that little prime minister they got, somebody must have read him a few pages out of the good book, because he turned around after all that yabber jabber about democracy and everything, and he basically bent over backwards and, oh please, let us save some money. And now, what I'm gathering from my feet here, it's not a great chance, but there is a chance that they're about to house his ass right out of office.
Well, that would suit the right wing in Greece right down to the ground. It's what they've wanted all along. Because the wealth class in Greece have long ago moved their money over into, not Greece.
Yeah.
So they're safe. No, this is going to be taken out of the hides of retired maintenance workers and retired government clerks. And because after all, you know, we can't have people retire. I heard it repeated as if it was some sort of moral outrage, John, that did you know that in Greece being a hairdresser is delineated a hazardous position, and you can retire with a state pension at 55 years old? And I was thinking, wait a minute, that's kind of humane, isn't it? You ever been around a hair salon long enough to breathe some of those fumes? I'm guessing they're not good for you.
Well, we got a thing going on in New York right now where they have the health department going to a bunch of them now to have them assessed whether or not they, you know, because of some, I think it was the Korean hairdressers, there was a news feed there about a month or so back.
Yeah, we talked about it here. It was an article series of, I think there were two or three maybe stories running daily in the New York Times. And it just blew my mind. And yeah, I mean the nail places, they're dangerous as hell. Those are dangerous fumes. And you know what? If you survive to 55, good. You should get a retirement. But then again, you know, there I am. I guess I'm a commie, right, John?
Oh yeah, we'll just take you out back and say, you know, sing the freaking Communist Manifesto or something. Well, if you're a communist, I'm a bloody communist, anarchist, whatever, hell, I think me and Lenin must be bed buddies or something, because, I mean, I'm looking at this stuff here, and it's like, holy crap, you know, I listen to a lot of different podcasts and news things and what have you, and there's this this lady who called herself Artist Bunny, I don't know what her real name is or whatever, but her big shtick is trying to tell the truth about how banking and money works. And she's been pretty active the last few days, and it just, the more I hear, the more I listen to it, the angrier I get. Because, you know, bankers can sit back with a damn charter from the government, and they can basically just conjure money out of thin air and get paid interest on it.
Right, and that's one thing that Dr. Bill brought up this afternoon that I went, oh, wow, yes, is that the money that the European banks and European nations say Greece owes, it's not exactly like that money is missing. Because in the final analysis, all of this money that they want from Greece ain't going to go in the bank. It's going to go to pay private firms. And so it is a great big giant honking, oh my God, wealth transfer from the poorest to the richest. And the one thing that made Dr. Bill's presentation today so engaging was that, being a historian, Dr. Bill was able to make direct point A to point B, bright red line connections between then and now. And if you want to set up the rise of a right-wing, fascist, brutal movement inside Greece, this is practically the handbook on how to do it, John.
Oh, yeah, without a doubt. I mean, you can have Dr. Bill, and in fact, if I get around to it, I might try to call him tomorrow, but you can check with him. You know, I sit there and I argue this. Back when the Civil War first cracked open, Lincoln did what the Constitution allows him to do. He actually had the Treasury print what they call greenbacks. And he didn't go through a bank to do it. And it was legitimate money. And it sits there and gets me. You know, you talk about people back when 9/11 happened. What did Dean Leader yap about? Go out and go shopping.
Go to the mall. Go to Disney World.
Yeah, show them you're not afraid. Well, yeah, go into debt. And that's the thing. And it's like, I argue this a lot in the quote-unquote truck stops and places I go to. They're bitching about the $18 trillion debt that the United States has, the federal government has. And I ask a simple question, and you should see the eyeballs roll around like marbles. Because I ask this question, okay, well, where is the money?
I'm gonna.
Yeah. Well, the thing about it is, and like I said, I strongly recommend any of your people out there, if you get a chance to read Arlis Bunny's book, or Nancy get a chance to listen to her on the radio, very concise and very clear cut the way he talks about it. The United States, our monetary system is based on debt. It's a balancing between public and private debt. If the government has got debt, then the private sector is holding the debt. The banks and the private institutions, they're the ones that have it. These fuckers sit here and complain about how broke the country is when they're sitting on, and I just read an article 2 days ago, and when I read that article, I lost my freaking mind. Corporations in this country and with money holding overseas, they're holding $18 trillion in cash sitting in banks all over the planet. $18 trillion, which, oh, by the way, just happens to match the amount of money that the government owes. These rich bastards are sitting back, they're waiting for this economy to blow up so they could come in and they can scoop everything up for pennies on the dollar. You lose your house, tough shit. Your kids can't get educated, tough. We don't need you to have an education. We need you to be stupid and dumb. Now I'm starting to stay odd. Now I'm starting
well,
to
that, and, and, that, and at the risk of some people maybe thinking that my first hour was irrelevant, it really wasn't. Because if you take that recruiting poster that I read from Tennessee, they're coming after your land, they're coming after your money, and they're coming after your woman, and they're going to rape her. Now there, dirt farmer, put down your plow and go pick up your rifle and go fight for some rich plantation owners. It's the same stuff 150 years later, John.
And
it's not always about war. Yeah. You've got to, I mean, I'm looking here at the blast email that went out from Scott Walker today. Got the hockey puck handy?
Oh, my dentures won't handle it, but go ahead and hit me anyway.
It came from Scott Walker for America. Fellow conservative, I'm running for president. Well, he only wishes he could sound this good. Fellow conservative, I'm running for president of the United States, and I need your support. The first hours of this campaign are critical. Obama, Clinton, and the liberal media are watching us very closely, and we must show we have grassroots leaders on our side. Your contribution of $35, $50, $75, $100, $250, $1,000, or even $2,700 will show them you are tired of their radical left-wing agenda and ready for something new. Radical left-wing. John, did I blink? When did we get the radical left-wing agenda? Because I'm upset. I wanted to participate.
Seriously, where's my damn union card?
I don't know if you've seen the news. This was breaking right as I was wondering if the house was going to be blown away. Came in from the New York Times. And oh my God, their heads are already exploding. Breaking news alert. And you know, this is the Pentagon, right? This is the Defense Department, which is a function of the executive branch. Are you ready?
Oh yeah, I'm my butt's not chewing my phone right now.
Plan would let transgender people serve openly in military. The Pentagon is finalizing a plan to allow transgender people to openly serve in the military beginning early next year, Defense Secretary Ashton B. Carter said Monday. The plan would end what is seen as one of the last discriminatory rules about who can enlist or be commissioned in the military. It would also represent a tacit recognition of the fact that thousands of transgender people already are in uniform. Heads are already exploding all over right block Sylvania.
Oh, without a doubt. I've said it before. These people, their world is changing, and they cannot handle it. They cannot handle it.
Well, see, there's some more of that radical Clinton, Obama, radical left-wing agenda.
Jeez.
Even the military. I mean, they done let the homos serve. And now they're going to let the drag queens in.
Yeah, and have you ever seen some of them drag queens fight? Damn, I don't want to be on the other side of that. That'd kick your ass in a heartbeat. No. This is the same damn thing. The plutocrats are freaking sticking their hand up to their elbow in your back pocket trying to get your wallet, but all the while they're waving that right hand around worrying about the drag queens and the homosexuals whether or not some damn... They had a thing on today that just blew my mind. What was it? Rand Paul, I think it was. It was just absolutely having a sneak fit because he did an examination of the federal budget and the endowment for the arts spends $25,000, blah, blah, blah. And the first thought that went to my head when I read that thing is I was like, wait a minute, don't they have this damn super fighter that they've been trying to build for the last 10 years? It's like $5 or $6 billion over budget.
Yeah.
And yet he's having a snake fit because, you know, somebody, you know, might be, paying a little bit of a grant to some artist to create, you know, art or whatever. And he's having a sandbox fit about that. And I'm going, where is this part? You know, these people, it's dog and whistle showing. And it really makes you think that some of these right-wingers, you almost start to feel sorry for them because it's like, and this is just me, of course, but it's like, are these people that damn dumb?
You know, a majority doesn't have to be, John. If you've got 25% of the country... stupid enough to pick their own teeth with their own toenail clippings. You can do or keep from happening just about anything you want in this country, bar none.
Yeah.
And that's where we are. It's our reality. I mean, let's see. One of the things out of this all this flag business, one of the things that has chapped me the most is that Nikki Haley, Nimrata Haley, is somehow being lionized as a reformer and a statesperson when she couldn't even be bothered to. I mean, a year and a half ago it was, well, I haven't heard from any business people saying the Confederate flag was a problem, right?
Vice President Nikki Haley.
Yeah, here it comes. But meanwhile, over on her Facebook page, and this is where it gets fun. This is why I brought up those that 25%, that noisy plurality that can push and pull the country anywhere it wants to go. When the flag came down, and there are a lot of them in South Carolina, the seditionists came out. This is just a brief selection of comments from her Facebook page. This is the day that South Carolina has no history to be thankful for. So glad it was a Republican to screw it up for all of us. So many of us are proud of the men and women that fought to protect this great state. Thank you, Nikki Haley, for being a spineless bitch that you truly are. Hashtag history doesn't belong to you. This is a story about you taking our history and throwing it in a trash can, ! I know you don't understand this, but the people of South Carolina should have been able to decide if our history was messed with. So what's next, Governor? Take all of the war and the flag out of the history books in South Carolina? Way to go. Then there's this. You truly are pathetic, Haley. Congrats on signing your political career death certificate, because you just spit in the faces of your constituents and will never hold elected political office again. Now, no one bothered to explain to Cletus that she's term limited and can't run for governor again, but that a whole lot of the United States is saying, well, my goodness gracious sakes alive, that Nikki Haley certainly does seem to be atypical for your average redneck southern politician. You are a coward and a true disgrace. If only we had recall, we could get rid of you for this despicable action that is a result of ignorance. The flag didn't kill those people. A deranged individual who needed help did. Needed help, really? You have done nothing but bring the full fury of the left and their desire to destroy this country down upon us. You cannot appease them like this. You can only encourage them. Maybe you can snap off a Hitler salute to your Führer, 8:23 p.m. Who had 8:23 p.m.? Obama and the fanatical left, welcome to the fascist state of America, where censorship, political correctness, and revisionist history reign supreme. This is a black day in the history of this proud state. Lindsay, really? Did you write that, Lindsay? And it goes on and on and on. Apparently these dumbasses don't realize that the legislature passed the bill. I mean, even in moments like this, their racial ire it knows no bounds, you know, because there's a whole lot of white men and some white women's too who voted to take that rag down, but they get a pass because Nimrata, well, you know, all I mean, they voted for and everything, but you know, she ain't really white, and she probably ain't really American. You know, her parents ain't from around here.
Oh, yeah. It's just, and the stupid stuff that they do. I mean, I still get a kick out of the fact that, the hypocrisy that's going on out there. I mean, they bitch for what? You know, in fact, in some cases, they're still bitching about the fact that I've actually heard it told to me in the last couple of days that we never saw a real birth certificate, and yet you got Rand Paul or Cruz. Well, he was born in a foreign country. Why don't we look at his birth certificate? Let's get to the goose to get to the gander, but you never hear a damn word about it from the right wing on this one.
Oh, but he ain't no goose. He's a man of God, Rafaelito Eduardo Cruz, anointed future king of America, son of Rafael Eduardo Cruz is.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I hope I personally think if they got you, come get his ass now and get it over with. That's just me. And I apologize a little bit. This last couple of days, listening to some of this mess has just irritated me beyond recognition. They're sitting there and stealing countries left and right. It's like the thing in Greece. Some of the proposals they got, Bob, are as draconian as you could get. They had like 2 days to pass things like pension reform, which is code word for cut the pensions to the freaking working people. They're being forced to sell, strategic components of their industry, like telecommunications and what have you. They're being forced to basically sell that stuff to private businesses. So, you know, Greece has one of the best phone services in the world because it's mostly run by the government and it works. I travel the country in the United States with all these private countries, and it's like, you know, I got to be watchful where I go with the dang phone, because if I'm not careful, I can have full service, full bars, full internet, everything, drive 5 miles up the damn road and gone. And it's ridiculous, you know. And yet they want to privatize. This is a gigantic, this is theft on a scale that buggers the mind. They're basically stealing that damn country. And...
it wasn't nailed down.
Well, I was told something, and I don't know how true this is, so let me insert a caveat before I let you go. But I have a friend of mine who works in D.C., and I won't specify where. But he told me that if you remember last week, there was strong talk about Greece was going to back out, was just going to say, you know, when they had the referendum and everything, it was going to be no, and they basically were starting the process of really thinking about just breaking out of the EU and be done with it. But then there was all these news articles about, now, a lot of people may not recognize this right now, but there's an organization called the BRIC Nations. It's Russia, China, Brazil, South Africa, and India. And I put them together in the wrong order, but called the BRIC Nations.
Right.
And they did something 2 weeks ago that, to me, is one of the biggest things that's ever happened in economics, but nobody in this country is talking about it. They have set up their own, the equivalent of a reserve currency bank for themselves. And their avowed goal is to create a banking system that is not routed through any U.S. banks.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's a lot of...
Right,
there's a lot of complaints.
Meanwhile, while I was gone, somebody can bring me up to speed. What was that glitch? It was a glitch that shut down the New York Stock Exchange. What was that?
Okay. I'm going to momentarily put my tinfoil hat on. There is rumor and belief going on right now that was an aborted hack, because it hit the Wall Street Journal, it hit the New York Stock Exchange, it took out the landing and ops controls in the United Airlines. They grounded most of their fleet for an hour or so. I mean, it was huge. But everybody just said, oh, it's just a minor glitch, you know, no big deal, blah, blah, blah. But when you take down what was considered at one time the flagship of the American economic system, the stock exchange. Well, it revealed something pretty important, and this was reported kind of backhandedly, but it used to be that 85% of all the stock trading that was done in the Western Hemisphere and largely for the world was run through New York. It was over 85%. But when the stock exchange crashed this time, it turned out that only about 15% of the trades were affected, and they discovered, maybe they knew it, I just didn't know about it because it just never got reported until something like this, you know, brings it to light. But it turns out that the internet, and what they call the dark net, is running trillions of dollars of money being run off the books. companies are being traded, stocks are being traded, they're not even going through a stock exchange. Money's moving around this planet, and nobody knows where it's at. I was like, wow, that's cool stuff. But when they talked about it, they said that, you know, the official word was it was minor glitches. But you don't get 3-4 minor glitches all happening on the same freaking day with major institutions. It's like that they arrested a guy here a couple days ago for supposedly a crime he did back about 10 years ago. For hacking into, what the hell was it? He hacked into something in the U.S. government. And they caught him and they charged him here about a week or so ago. And
I've got to read up on it some because it just, it seemed, and there was mention of stock trading problems in China at the same time. At the same time, it was fascinating. Because the hotel we were in is apparently a regularly used destination stop for, and that whole area is because it's very near Dulles, for bus tours. And every night they were there, a different bus pulled in, filled with, I mean to be xenophobic in no sense in this regard, or at all in any regard. But busloads of Chinese tourists. And I would stand there watching, and, you know, I wasn't having my Donald Trump hissy fit or anything. But I was thinking, this is proof that there is a brand new Chinese middle class comprised of tens or hundreds of millions of people. Because it cannot be cheap to get on a jet in Beijing and fly nonstop to Dulles and what they do is they take a bus tour then of the D.C. area and Northern Virginia and the historic monuments and that kind of stuff. The last day they were there, it was charming. There were probably 100 school kids, I'd say middle schoolers, and they all had matching sort of cobalt blue Adidas rain slicker jackets. And they all had matching neon yellow backpacks, so they were immediately identifiable. You know, good group planning because you're coming to America, one of the most violent countries in the world. But I mean, every night we were there, and that tells you a little bit of something about the money that's being made over there, because that something like that is unthinkable, even 15 years ago.
Yeah, well, out here in Vegas. Well, out here in Vegas, one of the fastest growing jobs is the concierge and the people who can speak Chinese. It used to be Japanese were the big whales that came into town, but now the Chinese are now right up there. You know, you got people who work for the casinos and stuff. Your last caller could probably tell you more than I can. They have the.
That's right.
This is a
Vegas Monday. Indeed.
Yeah,
hey, John, I got a roll. I want to make sure we get to everybody who wants to talk. But good talking to you. And
cool,
stay safe now.
Oh, no trouble. Thanks.
Right. Bye now. From somewhere out on the road, that is that's John. Let's go over, and I suspect we have Jenny up in Fitzwalker Stan.
Hi, Bob.
How are you?
A long time listener, first time caller.
Well, yeah, but you've been on some Friday on the front porches, so.
Oh yeah. Oh, it was horrible. It was absolutely horrible. I had done this your first hour of the Bob Spring to listen to torture myself with this speech.
Oh, I did not. I could not. It would have been a physical impossibility for me to sit through the Scott Walker. The future belongs to me speech.
It was horrible.
My God, Jenny, didn't he say it was God's will for him to be president?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. It was, yes, he did. Yeah. He's horrible. I don't know. I don't even know what to say. It's terrible.
Yeah, I heard him briefly profiled on some news program this morning, and the report, and the way they handled it was, He's been winning elections since he was a teenager. The son of a preacher, blah, 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 blah. And nowhere in there is the mention that the man lived on Social Security. The very thing that he wants to take away from other Americans put him in, you know, well, made him who he is.
Yeah. So I've been in Milwaukee a long time, so I've like, I was in radio for a while, and I came back to college, and somehow I got into the honors program at UWM, and we had to read a book by Charlie Sykes, who's our local, you know, right-wing radio show host here in Milwaukee, because they said that, you know, it's too liberal, college is too liberal. So they made us read this book, and I read the book, and there was one quote from him. It was called The Nation of Victims, and he was saying about how the woman who got burnt by the coffee was a dean of victims. You know what I mean? Oh, she's so stupid. You know, the McDonald's coffee thing that everybody likes to
Right. So
but one of his quotes was like, here, like a footnote, it was like, ha ha ha, just kidding. And when I read that, I'm like, what kind of reasonable person writes that in the book? So he had his book, and then the Harry Bradley Foundation, you know, it was like Sarah Scaife, the Harry Bradley Foundation.
Yeah.
So I went into like a huge right wing thing. And then right after I read that book, there was like a pension scandal, you know, an alleged pension scandal that was like drummed up by this right wing talk show host. And then the person who got elected on the recall was Scott Walker, the county executive. And he's been on this like little gravy train. That was in the mid-90s. He's been on this gravy train of like rising up ever since then. It's so disturbing. And his speech tonight, it was horrible. We defunded Planned Parenthood. We got the Castle Doctrine in. It was just unbelievable. We need to like get, we hate Muslim extremists. It was insane. It made Donald Trump look reasonable, really, in my opinion. Bad. He didn't say anything about immigration. Nothing at all, but, yeah.
Well, I tweeted earlier today, I finally understood why it's taken so long for him to enter the contest. He waited until after the first reporting period was over with, or maybe it's the second, I'm not sure. Second.
Right, he should campaign on the state ballot, or in the state money.
But the Koch brothers who own him, of course, he's not his own human being. He is a creature. He's a tool. I mean, he's like a pick or a shovel. He's a tool that's owned by the Koch brothers. And they waited this long to see if he was going to get indicted. And I guess that they've made sure that he won't be. And so they're going to let him run for president and told him that he could. And what they're doing is hedging their bets because the Koch brothers will spread the money around. They just want to make sure that whoever the nominee is, that they've got the necessary amount of influence.
Right. Yeah, he is totally a cokehead. He's terrible. He's horrible. Do you remember when the guy called him pretending he was the Koch brother?
Oh, that was hilarious, yes.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And we have a new lawsuit. Voters have, like, they put a lawsuit to, because they gerrymandered the state. That's the only reason why he won the recall. I mean, the way that the Republicans have, like, taken over our state is because in the 2010, they gerrymandered our state. And I find it surprising. Like, everybody talks about gerrymandering. Isn't that illegal? The people say gerrymandering.
No, well, not anymore.
I know, but that's insane. It's crazy. Oh, I won in a blue state. I won in a blue state. You're not going to win in this state anymore.
Well, wait. How is Wisconsin a blue state after the last 5, 6, 7, 8 years?
Well, because the presidential elections, he votes overwhelmingly for Barack Obama or Democrat.
Yeah, but you've got a right wing Republican assembly and Senate and governor and Supreme Court for that matter.
Because in the midterm elections they gerrymandered our state, where there's no way any Democrat can win. There's no way. And I used to live in Glenn Grossman's district. It was horrible. And the people out there, well, I'm so glad I live in, like, super democratic land and south side of Milwaukee, but the people, they're just uneducated and ridiculous. It's terrible. I guess even if they did gerrymander. But my vote never counted out there, except in presidential election. It would be like, you know, 80,000 versus 4,000.
Yeah.
In my district.
And we have a Supreme Court that has made it clear that they don't want anybody looking into the nefarious intent of right wing state governments to disenfranchise voters that they don't like voting.
Well, isn't there a thing right now in the district court for South Carolina? Isn't there a case going up right now?
North Carolina
for voter disenfranchisement.
But
yeah, because they totally changed our voter laws here. Now we have to show ID, and it's like so ridiculous.
Yeah, but I wouldn't go and bet the $32.38 that we've brought in this evening on that case succeeding.
Yeah.
I wouldn't do it. Because those things once in a while you'll have a win, but they routinely fail.
It's so depressing.
Well, and it's especially depressing in a place like Wisconsin. And
oh God!
Because I know what the Wisconsin idea is, and I know what a good thing it has been over the decades for the people of Wisconsin. I've still got a Wisconsin crush.
Right.
I still love the place. All you have to do is compare Minnesota with Wisconsin. And
yeah.
Minnesota is up, 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 growing, 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 succeeding, succeeding, succeeding. And those are all Democratic progressive policies.
Exactly.
Meanwhile, Scott Walker, who is a great guy, just ask him, he'll tell you. Has presided over an economic disaster.
Daddy was a preacher.
Yeah. Oh well. Yeah, absolutely. We love Jesus, and that takes me back to something I've said about him on a number of occasions. It was a couple of years ago when he was invited to speak to the Lincoln Day dinner of the Republican Party of Alabama, and someone asked the Republican chair why they would invite somebody from Wisconsin, you know, Yankees.
Yeah.
And the Republican chair down in Alabama said, "Well, I think Scott Walker has Alabama values." And to this day, I do not understand why the Democratic Party in Wisconsin didn't plaster that quote on billboards all over the state. Scott Walker has Alabama values, and nobody in their right mind would I mean, you look at because you know that was said by a Republican in Alabama. You know, wear him out with it because. I know one of the going phrases, Jenny, is Wississippi?
Yeah.
Well, Wissabama too. Because that's what they're trying to do. He wants to turn Wisconsin, and he's succeeding, into Alabama. Trust me, you don't want to be that.
I know. Trust me, yeah, I know. And I think that I don't know, the Democratic Party has put up some, like, the mayor of Milwaukee who ran against him as for the recall. He's a weak candidate. And I just think that...
Your lieutenant governor candidate was a better candidate for governor than your gubernatorial candidate.
Exactly. Exactly. But I think that we were, like, we're just... I don't know. I think they're too nice to be mean to people.
Well,
if you're looking
for a little bit of hope, I carry on some conversations up there, and I am being told by someone who should know that a whole lot of that Wisconsin, go along, get along, be nice to everybody, everybody wants the same thing, blah, 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 we're all Americans here, that boat has sailed.
Coming to an end?
It has sailed.
Good. Good. Yeah. And, I mean, my friends on Facebook and stuff, you know, if that's any kind of measure or whatever, but
yeah,
it's bad. You know, she's had so many policies that have affected so many people that even if you were Republican, you're still feeling the effects of what he's put in place. I mean, Aldo Leopold, for God's sake, you know, we're like the head of the conservation of the whole country, you know what I mean?
You had the best set of mining laws in the entire nation, and that's why they had to be upended. And the vehicle to do that was the attempt to destroy the magnificence that is the Pinoki Hills.
The North America's largest open pit iron ore mine on the shore of Lake Superior. Are you freaking joking me?
Yeah, I know.
That's insane.
I mean, but that's one of those things that I don't understand why it hasn't been trumpeted by the so-called environmental movement all over this country. A little group of residents allied and being led by the native band, the Bad River Tribe and the LCO folks helping out up there stopped those people in their tracks.
They are the only people who can save us.
Yeah, I mean, the NRDC can't take credit for that. Sierra Club can't take credit for that.
Nope.
Nobody can take credit for that except the grassroots determined activists up there who stood up and said not just no, but hell no.
Exactly.
And yet you'd be hard pressed to ever know it even happened.
But the Republicans, the guy from that district up there was a Republican, and he voted against it. And he retired, but he totally went against all the Republican stuff from there on in. What was his name? I can't remember. But he was a Republican senator from up north, and he went against it. And he was like the only he was the stop vote in the Senate, in the state Senate, to stop the legislation because he went against them. And it came out that those people gave Scott Walker I have no idea how much money and basically wrote the legislation. Why aren't people insane about that?
You tell me. I happened to be up there at a time when you would see the Scott Walker recall signs in the yard, and it was explained to me that those good-hearted Wisconsin people felt like it was unfair that Scott Walker wasn't getting his fair shot. He was elected for 4 years,
so we have to give him
4 years.
That's why the recall effort failed, was just because people were like, oh, we just gotta let him try it. But so we're way too, you know, we're way too nice or something. But, yeah. Anyway, I don't know. I'm, like, over-aware. I don't know enough, but I'm over-aware. And there's so many people who don't know anything. Mm-hmm. So that's the problem.
I understand. I understand completely. Well, it has been lovely to hear from you, Jenny.
I hope
this will not be the last time.
Did I sound okay?
Your audio is a little bit on the low end of the spectrum. It needs a little needs a little treble tweak, but that's okay. but you should know that every evening when I walk into the studio to do the program, one of the first things I see is that wonderful portrait of the Sandhills.
Aww. And I'm really hoping to get out there in November, drive by, do a quick painting and drive by. I'll bring you a six-pack of New Glarus.
Oh, I will kiss the ring. I will kiss the ring.
All right, sounds good.
All right, Jenny, you have a good
Thanks,
evening.
Thanks, Bob.
Bye
you
now.
Too. Thank you. Bye.
Jenny calling from the greater Milwaukee area. And just to let you know, and I'm going right back to the phones here as we wrap up the program, my God, this has flown by, and seems like we didn't get into near enough morons. But that's what happens when there's a travel report. Just a quick update. We got out to a quick little start and stopped right there. We have remaining in the evening's fundraising, we have $167.62 because Luda wanted to make me do math on the fly, and I'm pretty sure I've got that right. We've got $167.62 to, God, I hope I'm right, to go in fundraising this evening. I don't know if we can raise that in the next 9 minutes, but it would be great. That's roughly 10 folks at $16.76 apiece. Yeah, let's screw with Bob's math problem. Thanks, Luda. Well, no, but thank you, Luda, for kicking in, and thank you, Gerald, for getting us started this evening as well. It is much appreciated on both accounts. $167.62 to go for the evening. And let's run over to the stress line, where I think we've got Richard. Is that you, Richard? Oh, Richard. Hang on here a minute. Oh, you shifted on me. There you are. I got you, Richard.
Can you hear me, Doc?
I do indeed.
I can't hear you on the phone. I can't make you out. It's all distorted.
I'm terribly sorry.
Oh, actually, I'm terribly sorry. Anyway, hello. You've been gone for a week.
You couldn't hear me earlier because you weren't in the system.
Yeah, let me turn you down now. Well, I'm trying. It ain't working.
Are you there, Richard? Teching on the fly is not always a good idea. Now, darn it, I don't know what you did, Richard, but you disconnected my Bluetooth here. So I'm going to have to hang up. Don't talk, Richard. I'm going to have to hang up, and you're going to have to dial back, okay? Bye. Well, that was interesting. I've never had anybody able to turn off Bluetooth from their end. It really shouldn't work that way. No, not at all. Oh, someday I'll have a staff. Well, I mean, like here in the studio, we've got an all-volunteer staff. It's just that you get the idea. Yeah. Hey, thanks, Ralphs. Thanks very kindly for helping us advance the total this evening. Now, okay, so 7 minus 5. Nope, still not working. Hang on. 7 minus 5, 142.62. Yay, we're making progress. All right. Now, Richard, try back. We are all connected up now. Go figure. Waiting. At any rate, we got about 6 minutes to go in the program. I don't know how that happened. I really don't. That was curious. Well, maybe we'll have to push that out to like tomorrow evening for Titanic Tuesday or something. So since I don't think we're going to hear back from Richard, how about one little Moran? Just a soupçon of Moran. No. You want to help out? You want to help move something along? Over at the top of Huffington Post Green, a brand new article by Kate Shepard. Groups call on Congress to bar new permits for mountaintop removal coal mining. Good article. Talked with Kate earlier today. Okay, maybe that's Richard again. All right, Richard, are you there?
Yes, it's Richard.
Yeah, don't touch anything.
I'm not touching anything.
Okay, you've got about you got 4 minutes to get everything out of your system.
Okay, hello. I just thought I'd give you guys an update on my housing situation. There isn't any. I am looking in Wisconsin and Tennessee at the moment. I found that Charleston, West Virginia was weird and rather expensive for what it is. Does that make any sense to you?
Yes, it does.
Why is Charleston relatively expensive?
Because there's not a lot of good housing, and the good housing is expensive. I know that's a circular explanation, but it is what it is. No, moving anywhere in West Virginia would have been a terrible mistake, Richard. I still don't know why you're not looking up in Humboldt.
I'll tell you what, I am looking in Humboldt County area, northwestern part of California. The problem is, right here around where I live, the rents are going up every single week, and it's affecting the rents all over the state. So the rents are going up in Humboldt County as well. It's relatively unaffordable there, too. I mean, it's cheaper than here, but it's really steep. I can't afford it. That's the bottom line.
Yeah, that's a pretty good explanation.
Yeah, and I'm looking at the clock. I want to say one thing that's really important to me. When I was growing up in New York City, New York had very good, tight, effective rent control, and that made it possible for artists to live in that city. And it was a wonderful place to be. That is no longer the case. And, you know, I don't know what kind of artists are working in New York. I think the wealthier ones. And really, the real estate industry is the elephant in the room in this country, and nobody is talking about it. It's screwing us. And we're helpless.
Yes, so, I would agree.
You know, and nobody talks about this, but I remember when they had.
I mean, there are places where there's relatively inexpensive real estate, but generally speaking, there's no services.
Right.
There's places you can buy real estate. I mean, my God, what, you can buy a house in Flint, Michigan for next to nothing, but it's because it's Flint, Michigan.
Exactly.
And it's already been picked over by the capitalists.
By the who?
By the capitalists.
Okay, you know, I'll have to take...
You know, capitalism? The banksters?
Oh, them, yeah, okay, I made you out. Are you on a Bluetooth, did you say?
Well, it's connected to a gizmo by Bluetooth, yes.
Oh, I see. Maybe that's why I'm having trouble understanding it.
No, I don't think so.
Okay. Mancave said try Trinity County, Richard. I'm trying to stay away from the middle of California, or the central part of California, away from the coast, because I don't do very well with heat.
Understood. And, well, Richard, we will continue this conversation on another evening, because I've got 40 seconds to get out of here.
Okay.
All right. Take care, Richard. We'll talk
to you. Get out of here, Bob.
All right.
Bye.
My buddy Richard, still in the Bay Area for the time being. Thanks to everybody who has helped keep everything going in the last week and always. And thank you, Luda and Gerald and Ralphs, for helping out this evening. 142.62 remains in fundraising for the evening. Thank you very kindly to Chris for her help, and thank you very kindly to Kevin and Dennis and Paul, all of you, thank you very much over the course of the last several days. Thank you, Kate. Thanks, one and all. And, yeah, it's time to go. We'll be back with Titanic Tuesday. Gina, it's all for you. Good night, y'all.